Among all the issues facing American education, school choice, assessments, chronically low-performing schools, and others, funding closely impacts all of them. This afternoon in downtown Lansing, Michigan State University's Center for Education Policy is holding a conference featuring three notable education experts, each of whom will bring his own perspective to the country's education funding challenges. Yesterday, I spoke with two participants. Paul Revel is a professor of educational policy and administration at Harvard University and was Massachusetts Secretary of Education when the state became the best in the nation in various educational measurements. And Dr. Robert Floden is an organizer of today's gathering. He serves as co-director of MSU's Center for Education Policy. I first asked Robert Floden about the larger aim of today's conference.
Sure. So it's about 20 years since Michigan changed the way it financed schools with Proposition A. And various issues have been coming up, particularly as we've also gotten into schools of choice and charter schools. And now people are interested in thinking about how we might use the funds we're using in schooling differently. So the State Board of Education, the governor, have both been thinking about this. So I thought, with the encouragement of some people in the government, that it would be helpful to bring in a few outside experts to bring in some other ideas.
And I understand one angle you won't be covering is how the ed sector might get a bigger allotment in state funding next year compared to this year. It's really not about that.
I don't think so. I don't think that would be a productive discussion in this group.
Paul Revel, you're one of the three guest speakers this afternoon. You'll be talking about what's labeled the Massachusetts model. What is the Massachusetts model and how does it work?
Well, I think that Massachusetts model simply refers to the fact that we've been highly successful with our efforts in education reform since 1993. And those have been a combination of a commitment to high standards, real accountability, and a commitment on behalf of governors of both parties and legislatures with all kinds of different leaders to provide adequate resources to build the capacity in the education system to achieve at higher levels than ever before.
And you've got data you can point to here, high graduation levels and so forth?
We've got a lot of data that would suggest that Massachusetts is at or near the top on virtually any indicator you want to bring forward in terms of student achievement in the United States. And yet, I got to say right away that we're not, neither do we have all the answers, nor have we achieved our original goals when we set out to do education reform. There's a lot more that needs to be done. But on the National Report Card, the NAEP, we are first in the nation in English and math at fourth and eighth grade. And we've done that five consecutive times. No other state has done it once. We've done it five times in a row now over a 10-year period. On international measures, we're at or near the top. We've basically moved out of the middle of the pack in student achievement during our reform efforts to now first in the nation. But it's not good enough, and we have a long way to go. And we've done some things that have helped us get there. And I'd be happy to talk at the conference about those things. And yet we have more that needs to be done.
What are some of the lessons that you think might be in the Massachusetts model for other states, for Michigan, for example?
Well, I think we had very strong business leadership in this effort because the success of the education system was perceived to be integrally important to the success of the economy in Massachusetts. So there was a deep-seated belief and strong advocacy on behalf of the business community that pushed the public sector and the field of education in particular, but the legislative leadership and the governor and so forth, to prioritize education as an economic development strategy. And so that was very important. Setting high standards. We set the nation's highest standards in Massachusetts and having real accountability associated with it. So we had both high standards and high stakes in our education system. A lot of states had high standards but low stakes. Some states had high stakes but low standards. We did both.
Sounds like it's a lot about consensus building.
Well, there was a lot of doing reform with the field rather than to the field, and that was part of the success that we had, that we, we're a highly unionized state the way Michigan is. And while we didn't agree and have consensus on everything, we had widespread agreement on important things to do, and there were key bargains. The whole of education reform in Massachusetts was entitled or labeled at various points a grand bargain, which meant that really it was a bargain between the field, who agreed to accept stringent measures of accountability in exchange for a refinancing of the system that had been starved for finance due to various kinds of economic setbacks in education.
I assume it must have some critics. What do critics of the Massachusetts model say? Is there a feature of the Massachusetts model that you wish worked better?
Well, those are two separate questions. We have critics like, you know, there are critics everywhere on matters of public policy or on standards-based reform generally. So we have some people who quibble about the standards. There's some people who feel there's been too much testing. There's some people who don't like school choice or charter schools. So there are various critics of various aspects of the strategies. I think what we've done on the whole has been necessary but not sufficient. And as I look to the future, I think we need to focus on some key strategies like differentiating between our students and giving each student what he or she needs rather than a one-size-fits-all model. I think we need to do a better job of bringing our health and social services systems into closer integration and collaboration with public schools so as to eliminate the impediments that get in the way of young people attending school or being attentive and supplying motivated effort when they get there. Third thing is I think we need to be much more attentive to closing the opportunity gap in the 80% of children's waking hours that are spent outside of school when affluent children have ready access to all kinds of learning opportunities, whether it's music lessons or travel or summer camps or early childhood education. And low-income disadvantaged youngsters don't have those advantages. And it turns out those comparative advantages and disadvantages have every bit as much to do with achievement gaps as anything that happens in school. So I think one of the lessons we've learned in Massachusetts is that schools alone, at least as conceived in the early 20th century model that we've inherited today, are insufficient to doing the job of educating all of our students to a high standard. And that's important because educating all of our students to a high standard is what it's going to take to get this economy up and going. Because those are the kinds of jobs, 21st century high-skill, high-knowledge jobs, that are going to fuel the American economy in the future.
It's Current State on WKAR, discussing issues in education funding with Harvard Professor of Educational Policy and Administration and former Massachusetts State Secretary of Education Paul Revel, along with MSU Education Policy Center co-director Dr. Robert Floden. Bob Floden, Paul refers to a consensus that education and the economy are closely tied. You hear a lot of talk about that here in Michigan. Do you feel we have a growing consensus in that direction in our state?
I see a lot of similarities between Massachusetts and Michigan in this regard. And, with our reliance on the auto industry for many years, people have been saying that there's been a need for changes in education as the needs of the knowledge and skills of the workers has changed from just being able to show up at the factory and do repetitive tasks to now being able to think, to work in groups, to think through things, to understand, to be able to read manuals and texts and work out problems with the more complex machinery. So I think there's a great deal of similarity between Massachusetts and Michigan in that regard. I don't think we've reached the same consensus about how it is that Michigan's education system is going to meet that challenge to the degree it's been reached in Massachusetts. We have been pushing for high standards. The Michigan Merit Curriculum that was put into place a few years ago was a major step at the secondary school level to raise the standards for all children in terms of what they needed to do to graduate from high school. And the changes that have been put in place in the in the testing system in Michigan to align those better with what we know about how test results relate to success in jobs and in college. Those have been important things. But I don't think we've reached agreement on exactly what else we should be doing in the education system to move us ahead.
Bob, let's talk a bit about your two other guests. Larry Miller of the University of Washington will bring what to the conference?
He works for the Center for Reinventing Public Education, which is a think tank. The part of the think tank that he's been working in has been looking at the way in which education, K-12 education, is financed in five different states. Michigan is not one of them, but he has a range of states, including New York and California. And he's going to come and talk about the differences in the models for how the funds are allocated to support education, how that varies across states, and the some of the opportunities he sees for changing the way of in which funds are expended that would allow for school districts to make more productive use of the funds that they bring. So that's Larry Miller. Tom DeLuca has done work in Michigan directly, and now he's working in some other states as well, to look at the use of education funds, particularly the non-instructional services, and an issue that has come up in Michigan, which is the extent to which districts might get together to consolidate their work in some non-instructional services, say the business office or transportation. And he's done work that has found that consolidations in the business office in particular have been helpful in Michigan's districts in allowing them to make better use of their funds. But in some other areas, even like transportation, he hasn't seen the same sort of effect.
Is it fair to call Mr. Miller, is he a defender of the charter school concept?
He's a defender of a market approach to education, I would say.
Paul Revel, how have public school academies done in Massachusetts under the Massachusetts plan?
You mean charter schools?
Charter schools, yes.
We've got some of the best charter schools in the nation in Boston, so we have a disproportionately high share of high-performing charter schools that are operating, particularly in eastern Massachusetts, in Boston and some of the surrounding communities. We've had a strong regulatory oversight view of charter schools and have been strict on quality issues in approving original charters and renewing charters. And charters are setting some good examples for public schools here. The competition has been healthy. It's still a relatively small percentage of students are served by charter schools, so I don't think charter schools are a silver bullet or the answer for the future in the sense of setting up a parallel system. But at the same time, in places like Boston, we've got some outstanding schools that have shown that we can do far better with populations that we've historically failed in mainstream schools.
Robert Floden, how hard is it for states to alter education funding policy?
It's very difficult. In Michigan, before the early 90s, when we made a change, we went for many years without altering the way in which we collected and distributed education funds. It was very much based on local property tax values. And frankly, I think people didn't think that a change was possible, even though we had highly unequal amounts of funding per pupil in different school districts. And then in 92, Debbie Stabenow and the governor at the time got together, and they put together a package that made for a dramatic change. Now, we haven't changed much since then, except for the growth in charter schools and in schools of choice. But the basic funding model has remained pretty stable since then. I do think people are now wondering about how well it's working across the wide range of school districts.
Should it be easier to alter education funding policy? Can it be easier? Bob?
I don't think it will ever be easy. It's a situation where you're going to have winners and losers, and you need to figure out how to build a coalition of different groups that would come together in search of the common good, knowing that some of them probably won't do as well under some changes in the policies as they are currently doing.
Current State discussing issues in education funding with Harvard Professor of Educational Policy and Administration and former Massachusetts State Secretary of Education Paul Revel. We're also joined by MSU Education Policy Center co-director Dr. Robert Floden. Paul Revel, one of Michigan's biggest education debates recently has been over which statewide student assessment to use in the future. How is Massachusetts going forward regarding student assessments, and is that as eventful a discussion in Massachusetts as it has been in Michigan?
I suspect it's not as important a discussion here. You know, we adopted the Common Core standards. Again, we had the highest standards in the nation, and a lot of the Common Core standards were built on our standards, so that's been relatively uncontroversial here. We're in the process of moving toward the PARC tests, and thus far we haven't seen any significant opposition to that. I think that those discussions can, they've gotten politicized in ways that I frankly think are a distraction from the more important topic of what we're doing to change strategy to improve our performance as an education system to increase student learning. In other words, all of our states had significant achievement gaps before adopting new higher standards. We've now adopted new higher standards, and adults love to argue about those standards, but we've adopted them for the most part. And the question is not how we measure performance or not what the standards are in particular, but what strategies are we going to use to close achievement gaps that already existed prior to the adoption of new standards and tests?
We want to thank both of our guests today. Both are participants in this afternoon's conference on education funding being held at the Michigan Municipal League in downtown Lansing from noon till 4:30. Paul Revel is a featured speaker who will talk about the Massachusetts model of education funding. Dr. Robert Floden is a co-director of Michigan State University's Center for Education Policy, which is organizing the conference. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, gentlemen. Pleasure
to be
with you.